Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to part two of our wonderful chat with Tori Peters. Now then, if you haven't heard part one, go back to the feed, click on it, have a listen there, and then come back and listen to part two here, which I will introduce now. Here it is. One of the things that I love about the book and I love about you is your honesty and the mischief just jumps off the page. And I think I interpret that as the mischief of like, look, I just said it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just said this thing. But the title has been discussed a lot, Detransition Baby. Was there mischief and purpose in that title?
Yeah, I want to say, like, I think a lot of the mischief is has to do with the fact that I hope that people feel that underneath the mischief is like real compassion, and that that we're like in this moment where you learn a lot of like dogma about what can be said or what can't be said. And The idea is to sort of like take ideas that are important and defamiliarize them or be provocative about these ideas so that, you know, if someone says trans women are women, like that's like a dogmatic, you know, kind of like slogan that is true and is like extremely important. But you hear it and it becomes a cliche. It slides off of your ears. You know, what does that actually mean? How does it mean? And so if you can sort of say these things from like unexpected angles, then number one, it's fun. And that's where the mischief comes from, is to like, you know, speak to somebody from an unexpected place, like sort of popping up behind their couch to be like, hey, you know, then it's like, that's entertaining. But also I think it's also effective rhetorically, like, you know, it causes people to reframe things. So in the case of Detransition Baby, the title, you know, there are people who are offended by it, and I feel bad that those people are offended, because I don't want to hurt anybody. But part of what I'm, and there's like a series of puns or sort of like non-puns in that title, you know, like the idea of appending baby to something like hasta la vista baby or you've come a long way baby
yes.
is like this convention that like what happens when you put it onto something that is sort of nonsensical. Like if you picture like Arnold Schwarzenegger being like detransition baby, like it's like, what, you know? So there's that. It's also extremely short description of the plot. There's a detransition, there's a baby. And I have one like really heartfelt thing that I say about it, which is that, you know, the comma is like the knife's edge of trans existence, that if you could just have the legitimacy of having a baby and being a mother, that'd be great. If you could convince yourself that it's fine to live as a man, that would be easier. But instead, you're sort of poised on the knife edge for your entire life. Mm-hmm. And so the title, you know, kind of creates that. But the real thing that is the core of this answer is the word detransition. It being this word that has been weaponized by sort of anti-trans groups. Mm. And so that, you know, if I say the word detransition, it feels to people like an attack. Just the word is an attack because of where it's, how it's been. But I basically use it because in this sort of, mischievous or, you know, provocative way, let's reframe the question of who really owns this word. You know, in order to detransition, you have to have first transitioned, which means you've gone through a period of this kind of experience. The people who weaponize it, and there are detransitioners who should have an absolute, you know, that's their word. But I also think the word belongs to trans women in that it looms for trans women. You know, when life is hard for trans women, they don't detransitioned because they were wrong about their gender. They had regrets about their gender. They detransitioned because life is hard. All the trans women I know detransitioned have been that way. But what ends up happening is if you can't talk about detransition, then as we talked about before, it becomes a site of shame. Like you detransition, you had a community, and then you become ostracized from it. You know, it's like that person is dangerous to us. That person gives, you know, evidence to the lie that trans women are, or trans people are crazy, who are constantly changing their body. So we have to like eject that person from our world.
Yeah.
De-weaponizing it, normalizing it, throwing it around as a casual word, as I do in my title, in a nonsensical way, like detransition, baby. That's the most casual usage of it that I could, you know, that you could possibly have. Well, probably you could come with something even more casual, but it's pretty casual. And if
detransition, duh.
Yeah, duh. Yeah. So, so there's, once it becomes casual, then you can talk about it. Right. And then you can talk about things like regret. You can talk about all these different ideas, and it shouldn't be such a painful thing to say. It shouldn't be such a painful thing to consider. And if it's not painful to consider, number one, it's harder to weaponize. And number two, it makes life easier. Like instead of being like, nobody ever regrets transitioning, that's not true. People regret transitioning. Why they regret it is a big question. And also whether regret is so bad is another question. Like, you know, what I often say is like, you can move across the country for a job and it doesn't work out, but nobody says, let's never talk about moving across the country for a job. Let's pretend that it's, that's not something that exists, moving across the country for a job that exists. And if you move across the country for a job, it will always 100% work out. And if it, and if it doesn't, you're banished from society. Like that's an unreasonable thing to talk about. If you're talking about something like moving across the country for a job, transition is similar. You took a chance for all sorts of reasons. Maybe it didn't work out. Maybe your family rejected you. Maybe you couldn't get work. Maybe you were sad. Maybe actually it wasn't even quite the gender place that you wanted to land and you wanted to be non-binary or whatever. Why are we stigmatizing that? You know, that's, And why are we pretending that that experience doesn't belong to us or people that we care about? So, you know, what seems mischievous in that title, like using a word that shan't be spoken, is in fact a thing where it's like the fact that we can't speak about this is hurting us. And so I'm going to start out by speaking about it extremely casually. And then you can read the book and start to see the like emotional resonance and core about why actually the ability to use a word casually is crucial to me. It's crucial to the way that I see the world.
So Ames, one of the main characters in the book, is the person who has detransitioned. Ames did it because, like you just spoke about, because it was too hard, right?
Yeah.
So it's baked into what this book is about as well. Is the reaction coming from people saying that you haven't detransitioned, therefore you can't speak about it?
Well, some people have certainly said that. You know, most critiques of me I've heard from one. If it's been possible to complain about me, I've heard it so far with this book. So that has been one thing I've heard. But, you know, that also doesn't, it has not generally been detransitioners who are like, you're speaking on our behalf and we don't want you to. It is people who've never transitioned. It is largely bigots who are like, who have figured out a kind of like rhetorical stance around the idea of authenticity, who are, you know, like, oh, they're mad. They're like, well, we can't talk about it, so therefore Tori can't talk about it either. You know, and this happens with any number of like identity positions around the questions of who can and can't speak. And I think a certain bigoted conservative stance is around disingenuously and in bad faith trying to use the arguments of who can and can't speak against the people who normally wield them. But suffice to say, I don't really, I recognize a bad faith argument for what it is, and I don't really care. The question is, if a detransitioner came to me and said, my experience is vastly different than Ames, and I feel that you've misrepresented detransition, and the possibilities of detransition, I would take that person seriously. I might have things to say to them about this book never claimed to represent the experience of all detransitioners, but I think that that person has a legitimate life experience that I can consider. I would also say that as a trans woman, I think detransition looms for me. I've had experiences that are, you know, moments in my life where I've come close to wanting to detransition, and that, you know, AIMS is in some way a logical extension of what it, of sort of like, what if I did that? And I deserve
that path for you.
Yeah, yeah. I deserve to have those thought experiments. But the people who largely say you can't talk about detransition because you're not a detransitioner, they're bigots who want me to shut up, and they've come across a convenient argument. And that's...
Well, there's no chance of that. But it's really... Yeah, because... But also what I'm thinking as you're speaking, I'm just like, well, you know, there's such little, on the whole, compassion for those who want to transition. Let's not take away compassion from people who want to detransition. Like... You know, the only parallel I can draw is like when I came out, like I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was just like, I think this is what I'm at. But what, you know, to add into that, well, you better stick with it. Why? You know?
Yeah, no. I'm having a book event with a writer named Carrot Quinn. She rode freight trains across the country, and she has this great book and sort of like the style of like Cheryl Strayed's Wild, like, you know, hiking that long
term. Oh, yeah, yeah. But
instead of hiking, it's hopping freight trains back and forth across the country. Carrot is somebody who transitioned female to male, transmasculine, transitioned, decided it wasn't for Carrot, and transitioned back, and is sort of like, you know, in a place of gender weirdness. And I was talking to Kara yesterday, and Kara was like, actually, my gender is the least interesting thing about me. And I, you know, I wrote this book, and like gender really isn't even part of this book, because it actually doesn't trouble me that much. And I'm fine. I'm doing great. And I've gone through this whole transition process and this detransition process, and it's not actually a traumatizing thing. Right? Like, it's actually a boring thing for Carrot. Like, Carrot has a million other things to think about. It's, you know, this idea that like, oh, you transition and you did, then you detransition and you're all you have left was like the tatters of your life around you and meaninglessness because you've gone through this, like, you know, some sort of gauntlet of horror to try, you know, actually people can just transition and then they can detransition or they can find a cool place. And like, it can be a not that big a deal. Like, it can just be a small thing, which is, it seems to be for Carrot.
Well, it's also, that feels like that's someone speaking from the inside looking out, rather than the narratives we put on are often from the outside looking in.
Exactly.
Of like, oh, that must be horrible for you. Well, hang on a sec, you know, is it? Yeah. And actually, when you say that as well, like, I'm reminded of Mickey Blanco, who was a previous guest on this podcast, and Mickey was transitioning and then decided that they didn't want to. And I think I've got this right, and you know, it's always an evolving discussion, but partly because the conversation about what they could be was evolving, you know, like, they were like, I think I remember them saying, like, you know, I actually realized, like, I was this fabulous person. I didn't need to go and start cutting myself up, and I actually was them, and I was doing it for other people in some respects so that I could fit into a box for other people.
Right. And then there's people like me, you know, which is like all things can be true at once. Like I'm what people call like a binary trans woman, and that like I feel very connected to my womanhood, and I needed it. And I have, in some ways, I feel so connected to my womanhood that on the far side of that, I can almost let it go a little bit. Like I'm so casual in my womanhood that I'm like, I don't, you know, I used to be like really high femme. These days I'm like, it actually feels so, womanhood feels so intrinsic to me that I can kind of like let go of it a little because it's just there for me. And it's interesting because that can look to an outsider like I'm moving back towards masculinity, but that's actually not the case. I've just chilled out, you know? And so someone like Mickey Blanco, who's maybe doesn't feel like that gender presentation, could look very much like mine. although what's actually happening internally are two totally different things.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yes, and you're reminding me as well of like you said two things which were really fascinating, which was from across the other side of the fence, it can look like cis women know what they're doing with femininity. And then you arrive there and you're like, okay, no one fucking knows. It's as difficult. Female identity is as difficult for cis women as it is for anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's something that is really the connection between Katrina and Reese in the book is around failure. It's around failing as a woman in all these different ways, and the ways that, like, lots of times you can build bridges in womanhood and in femininity is along lines of failure, along lines of feeling like, oh, I must not be doing it right. And then you can kind of like bond with people. Like the books that I read when I was writing Detransition Baby were largely books by divorced cis women, which I read partly because they described failure so well. And I was like, I feel like I'm failing. And here is all these books by, you know, like the Ferrante series felt just like a revelation to me, because I was like, the failure that Ferrante describes as a woman feels so much like my failure. And this, and I have, what ends up happening is that, like, I discovered my womanhood and the ways in which a commonality to my womanhood and a comfort in my womanhood, not around doing it right, but about doing it wrong with all these other women, that we were all doing it wrong together. And that's what made us women. And that's why I dedicated the book to divorce cis women was, you know, in a sort of superficial way, it's the way I say is like, okay, there's an arc that trans women and divorced cis women go through where it's like, my life looks a certain way for a certain time. And then there's a break or a failure and you have to move forward without either getting bitter or reinvesting in the illusions that brought you to that failure in the first place.
Yes.
And that's a sort of narrow version of it. But the expanded version of it is divorce with cis women is one very obvious way in which women are said to fail. And I have a lot of kinship with the particular failures of womanhood, that's how I make friends. It's the closest relationships I have with women. And in this book, you know, motherhood, similarly, the connections around motherhood is that all the different ways that mothers are told that they fail, that they're not raising their kid right, that they're putting their kid in danger. Here's all the ways that you're not a good mom. And that when you hear moms talk, they're not bonding over like, I'm an excellent mother and you are an excellent mother too. You know, like let's have our excellent mother club. It's like, things are hard. I made this mistake. How can I make it better? How can we help each other out? How can we do it? It's like failure is the glue.
Yes.
And fear of failure is the glue.
And also a lack of diverse role models for what that is, right? Because you've spoken about, you called it the Sex and the City problem.
Yeah. It was that when I was watching Sex and the City, the problem was that as you have your 20s and your 20s are fun, but as you get to, you know, your 30s and youth is fading and you're looking for how do you find meaning as a woman in your life, there's sort of four models that are embodied by the four Sex and the City characters. You know, you can You can get married and be a Charlotte. You can have a baby and be a Miranda. You can have a career and be a Samantha, or you can find meaning in like sort of art and expressing yourself and be a Carrie, who also, you know, in the end gets married. But there's two points to this. One is that I think those are sort of narrow ways, and that every generation ends up reinventing these narrow sort of ways of finding meaning. And then the other thing is that for trans women, it's aspirational to even be able to do these narrow ways of doing things. You know, it's only my generation as trans women who can begin to sort of aspire to this, to these narrow roles. So I'm both trying to make fun of the narrowness of the roles and be like, maybe there's ways to expand this. And also to say these narrow roles are nonetheless quite comforting and are a place that I aspire to be in. But yeah,
they're safe.
They're safe, yeah.
And they telegraph as well. They telegraph an accepted version of femininity. Mm-hmm. So by diving into them and concealing yourself in them, I have a version of that with masculinity, then you can feel safe. And then you're like, oh, but hang on, I'm continuing tropes that are disruptive.
Yeah. Right.
It's really interesting.
And it may not actually be... I mean, that's sort of like the balance that I'm always interested in, is to not necessarily be uncompromising about what we want. Sometimes we want bad things, but not necessarily always compromise either. To that we live in a balance between like, I want the safety of these tropes while also knowing that these tropes are not perfect, you know, and that's a balance, you know, because I think you could say these tropes are stupid, I'm burning it all to the ground. But that also isn't quite true to me, which is that the safety of those tropes, the safety of those roles, has an allure. It has a pull.
Yeah, but they also have a pull that I feel like, this is what I feel like, and I'm thinking about parenting as well. Like, they have a pull. I just find it annoying that it has to be assigned to a gender. Uh-huh. You know, like, why does the dad have to be the protective, strong, silent one? Why does the woman have to be the nurturing, kind one? Or, you know,
yeah.
I'm generalizing, but like, I'm really looking forward to being a parent and trying to be the, weirdly, the person who gives the femininity. And I think that that's beautiful. And that's the thing that I think is the bit that I find tricky. And I suppose that's big in the book, because these three people are working about how they're going to parent a child.
Yeah. Well, first off, congratulations to you that you're considering it. That's like a huge step.
Thank you. Yes.
What I'll say to that is,
as much sleep as I can,
is that I think there's what people want personally, and there's what you can do in society. Like, I think about this with marriage. I always thought with my first marriage that I would invent my marriage for myself, that I would be stronger than the institution, right? That marriage would be whatever too. I want it to be. And that my example of what happened is, as the first time, my first marriage, it was before I transitioned, and I was married to a woman. And the first time I went out, you know, after I was married, someone was like, well, where's Olive? You know? And I was like, listen, I'm not Olive's keeper. Olive does whatever she wants. She can go, you know, like, we don't have a marriage where we have to be together all the time. Like, what are you thinking? And then, you know, by the 10th time, I got tired of making that speech when someone was like, where's Olive? And I was like, I don't know. She's somewhere. And, you know, by the 100th time, someone was like, where's Olive? And I was like, yeah, where's Olive? You know? And it was like, the institution pushes you to become something, you know, but in a million little ways every day that you can't always be on guard for, that you can't always be aware of. And this fatherhood is similarly an institution, right? Where you can have an intention of, I want to offer feminine beauty. Your child goes to school every day and says, and, you know, kids are like, well, what does your dad do? And you get asked these questions, and then you don't want to necessarily always be telling your kid, like, you know, maybe you want to have a nice time with your kid, not necessarily be like, listen, there's gender roles and I'm subverting them. Yeah. You know, sometimes you just want to be like, let's play on the swings, right? But that that little moment is also a moment in which you're capitulating to that role. And so for me, the question of something like fatherhood or motherhood and these subversions is about an understanding that I'm never going to be able to wholly defeat these institutions. I can only sort of like have like a sort of ebb and flow of battle within them, and like come to a place of comfort in like you know, if someone expects me to be a mother, or someone, you know, asks you to be a father, that you can do your best to be intentional. And at the same time, I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm sure you're aware of all this.
Please do. God, yeah. I need some instructions.
But yes. Yeah. You know,
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because actually I was having a conversation with my husband the other week because we'd been, and he started, we'd been around some people who were a couple who would sort of do this kind of like, yes, dear thing to each other. As if like, oh, the other person's really boring because we've known each other for so long. And he did it to me when I got home. And this might make me really irritating and unrelaxed, but he did it to me. And I was like, just so you know, we're not going to do that. Like, we're not going to be that couple who find each other boring. I just think I don't want, because we're playing a role. Yeah. I don't find you boring. You don't find me boring, as far as I know. So, you know, don't do it. But you just made me think of something that you said, because what we're talking about is so many complex things, but actually in parenting, I heard you say the other day that you now have a stepson, right?
And yes.
You said, oh, he's not, you know, you're talking about gender and all of these complex ideas. And you're like, but he's actually not doing any of that queer stuff. So I need to just actually not shut up about it, you said, but something like, you know, it's just sort of, in some ways, none of that's interesting to him at this point in time, right?
It's not. And what he wants from me is, you know, like I have certain skill sets that maybe don't even accord to my current gender. You know, like I grew up, you know, I grew up in Chicago, but we went up to like Michigan and I spent time in the woods growing up. And so I have like some like camping and wood skills that are like definitely coded masculine, like here's how to sharpen a hatchet or whatever. And you know, like my stepson, that's what he wants from me. And so there's a way in which I'm like, his mom doesn't know how to sharpen a hatchet. So it's like, well, I guess we're doing hatchet sharpening today. And in some ways it's like, well, is hatchet sharpening really a gendered skill? You know, all this sort of stuff. And I could say all these things about, you know, sharpening hatchet should be a non-gendered ability. But I know that when Gray goes to school and like tells his friend, like, my stepmom Tori taught me how to sharpen a hatchet and like, you know, bait a fish hook and like all of these important knots, they're gonna be like, is Tori like a Boy Scouts leader? Like, what is like, what's up with Tori? And and like, you know, I can protest all, you know, so it's like at some point life gets, you know, it's like my individual connection with Gray is my stepson is in the end what I prioritized.
Yeah, and actually in a way what we're asking for, or what I feel I'm asking for, is like, can we get rid of all this gender assignment of any kind of task or feeling or anything? And in some ways that's what you're doing, and in a silent way. And if people want to ask that question, let them. That's the future, right?
I mean, basically, you know, I'm sure all his friends' parents are like, also, like, you seem like a great Boy Scout leader, and will you take our kids? And I have to be like,
I literally was about to say, they're all going to get sent around.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay, you know, just the, and that instead of, I mean, I think at a certain point in my life, I would have been insulted by it, and now I just think it's like, you know, kind of hilarious that like that you do this gender stuff long enough, and it's all funny.
I could have spoken to Tori for literally 2,000 years. It's really interesting listening to someone who has done so much kind of thinking and beautiful internal research, I suppose, about the meanings of gender and the shackles of gender. And I just thought that was such a fascinating chat. So funny. All that stuff about the Kardashians and things is just very, very interesting. And didn't even get onto some stuff that I wanted to talk to her about, but I feel like she's going to be back. I really hope so. Hope you loved that as well. Please write in and let us know what you thought. It's hello@homosapienspodcast.com and @homosapiens on Instagram. If you want to rate and review on Apple Podcasts, please do. We live for those reviews, and we'll give away a t-shirt to our favorite review of the week. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Take care, and a load of love to you all. Bye now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.